Space, the void between your ears. This is the saga of the Home Power Hour with Solar Jim and Sustainable Jack, hoping to bring the hope of sustainability to a terminal culture. You're listening to the Home Power Hour!
Yes, with Solar Jim.
And the other guy.
Sustainable Jack. Yes, the sun is shining, the wind is blowing, and the world is full of energy.
It is.
Let's reach out and grab some.
Let's do.
The source of power, the sun, radiating out its massive quantities of energy onto the planet Earth.
93 million miles away, every 8 minutes we're receiving another dose of energy.
Mm-hmm. A safe distance for the primary reactor.
That's right.
For this solar system.
The fission machine. Out there in space.
Churning
we get
out.
1 billionth of its energy.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to go on for another 5 billion years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Basically infinity as far as a human lifespan. Meanwhile, out on the fringes of our solar system, Pluto is being explored.
Explored?
Explored. by our robotic slaves. Bringing back fabulous pictures of ice mountains and frosty plains.
What was the name of that satellite? Ooh, I stumped the chump here. All right.
It's Horizons, New Horizons.
This just in from Horizon. Increase my trust fund or you won't get information.
Yes, it has yet to download most of its information.
That's right, it's going to take months. About 6 months to download 2 hours of information.
And years to study it.
But we here at the Home Power Hour only have an hour to download a lot of information.
That's right. Yes, people are shifting away from carbon sources, biking and walking and becoming more efficient every day.
That's right. I even had somebody come up and confess to me that they put up a clothesline over the weekend.
Ah, yeah. Nice, nice. Clothesline is basically a power generator, if you think about it offsetting the use of fossil fuels.
That's right.
On the road to zero carbon. Where we are, and we're further along than we thought.
That's right, and we're going to talk more about that today on this edition of
the Home Power Hour!
So, are you ready? Get set?
Strap yourself into wherever you are.
That's right. We're off to a fitting start here. Oh, my. Let's see if we got anything here. Ooh. Yeah. So, lots of things going on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's time for some news. Let's find out what's going on. And here with some headlines is our own Sustainable Jack.
It's news to me. Yes, I was at the Inner Solar this past week in San Francisco.
Wow.
The first floor was devoted to the sales of all types of new solar panels, primarily. And then the second floor was the balance of systems with a whole new section on batteries. Batteries have come down in price 40% the past year.
40%?
That's the high-end batteries. And the lithium-based type batteries. I got to see the salt battery.
Ooh.
And I was assaulted by it.
Is that the liquid, heated salt battery?
It's a liquid salt battery. It's not heated. And it's totally recyclable. It's just salt, cotton, and some other products, which can be taken apart and reused. That's pretty cool. Just like lead-acid batteries can be totally recycled now.
Huh, yeah.
Then the other part of it, of course, was up on the third floor, was where they were putting racking systems where you stretch out and you just stretch out the solar panels on them. Some of them are tracking. Some of them are like tents that will unfold now, like little garden sheds,
Wow.
And really interesting stuff. And then I was also part of the semicon. I just love that. Semicon. I want a full con or no con at all. But we got a semicon. And semicon was the manufacturer of semiconductors.
Yeah.
And the wafer people, the tabbing people that put those together.
The testing people. Solar cells.
That's right. And as we pointed out just 5 years ago, we started having dedicated plants to provide materials for solar.
Not just the poor stepchild of other semiconductors.
That's so correct. Also, there there was a company that we're hoping to get on here at some point that use aircraft, small, lightweight, drone-type aircraft that will go up and act as a wind turbine.
Yeah.
So they get up into higher altitudes where the winds are much stronger and fly in a circular or figure eight form and generate enormous amounts of energy.
Well, they've got to because they're using a lot to stay up there. So that's good. It's huge power in the wind.
So take it, Solar Jim. What do you have there as far as news?
Well, North Carolina is getting a big wind farm.
No!
Yes, down near Elizabeth City.
The biggest energy wind producer in the country that's connected to water. Great Lakes, East Coast, Gulf, or Pacific. And we're finally getting it. And the electricity is going where?
To Amazon.
Oh.
To power their cloud.
Oh, my. Well, we've missed out yet again on some possibilities for some money here, I think.
I think so, because Duke didn't accept it. It's being bought by Dominion.
Oh, my.
Going immediately across the border.
To that happy land north of us.
Virginia.
This just in, the Home Power Hour will be moving to Virginia now. Just because our power is off-put by solar.
Yeah.
You know, all 100 watts of it. Yeah.
That's almost enough for hamster power.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, human beings, we have about 75 watts each at rest. You can put out a little bit more, but then you...
If you think.
Then you need to rest.
And most of our listeners, we have got it on good authority, are putting out about 100 watts because they listen to Home Power Hour and they think. If they act, it's 125 watts.
So,
it's really
so
amazing.
Keep eating.
That's right.
Keep that that solar furnace running.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we got a book up here. It's called Power Shift. What's the next part of the title? I can't read.
From Fossil Energy to Dynamic Solar Power.
Who in the heck was that announcer? I like him.
That's nice. I like it when they have the actual close-up view of the boiling surface of the sun.
Oh, really?
On the book cover.
Yeah, we'll hopefully have the author on here in a very short order, but
that's being very hopeful. He's on the West Coast, right? So he's going to have to.
It's
like 6 in the morning there, or 5.
Seven, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Anyhow, we should get this.
It's about time. It's about space. About two men in the strangest place. It's about time. It's about flight. Traveling faster than the speed of light. Here is their tale of the brave crew. As through the barrier of time they flew. Past the fighting Minutemen. Past an armored knight. Past a Roman warrior. Ancient sight. It's about change, cave into, about a time when the earth was new. Where do they see what is in sight? Is it good luck or is it good night? It's about two astronauts. It's about their fate. It's about a woman and her prehistoric mate. And now
wow.
And why were we going back into time?
Well, if you look at that book, it starts off, you know, in the first chapter, it's talking about where our energy came from. You know, we were very sustainable for more than 99% of humans' time on Earth.
Yeah, when we were just doing it ourselves.
That's right. We were directly powering off of solar. Eating plants and animals that we caught or whatever. And, you know, then we started domesticating animals. We domesticated each other, kind of. At least that's what my wife is trying to do to me. And
then we had the gourd age,
yes,
where we made everything out of gourds. And
oh, we did?
Then we had the plaster age. And then once we learned to make plaster molds, we could have the bronze age. and then the Iron Age, and the wood epic for a very long time.
That's what we burned was wood. And if you didn't have wood, we had the Dung Age. That's not terribly celebrated anywhere. I don't know although many parts of the world, it's still the Dung Age. You dry poo and burn it.
Yeah.
And
because they've usually harvested the forest around the village, and so there's not much trees left.
So the wood age took us right up until, there's still people in the wood age.
Yeah, that's
but,
right.
And it's still very, sustainable in some cases. You can do it unsustainably and take the Fertile Crescent and make it a desert.
Yeah, then we had that messy horse age.
Yes.
Where they had to clean the Aegean stables on a regular basis.
That's right. Herculean feats there. And we just lost Hercules in the last two centuries when lots of cities this time of the year when it was hot summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Horses would not only, have to go to the bathroom, but it would get warm and smell really bad. And cities, had lots of problems with that. And then periodically they would just overwork a horse to death and it would just fall over in the streets. And they're kind of big and hard to move.
Yeah.
So
some horses to move that horse.
You had some terrible smells there. And they thought, maybe we'll use the automobile to clean up the cities.
That's true. Sorry. Now we're just being run over instead
That's right.
of stepped on. And then there's that burning of the fossil fuels.
Oh, yes.
Which has gotten us in so much trouble now.
Yes, the ancient sunlight, which is, 10 to the negative 26, efficiency.
Oh, yeah.
It's all solar energy. It's just been stored. And Mother Nature was kind of smart to put it aside.
Mm-hmm.
Our good buddy Bucky Fuller said that, the petroleum age that we are now in the midst of, is mother's milk. It allowed us to really advance our civilization, also caused lots of wars and battles, et cetera, over it, and wastefulness, et cetera. But he said, it's just like mother's milk. We have to get weaned off of it and go to sustainable sources. And that is exactly what our book is. We are now dancing.
We're addicted to fossil fuels.
Well, that's right.
George W. Bush.
Yeah, they edited out the other part of it, We're addicted to fossil fuels. Yeah! More money for us, right?
Actually, it's worse than an addiction.
Yes.
It's a dependence, a total dependence.
Because
an addicted person can go into rehab and can get off of it. But we're going to have
So what do we have now? We're not an addiction, it's a dependence.
Yes, we're totally dependent on fossil
fuels.
This
is dedicated.
Although there is hope.
Yes, there is.
The solar power is taking over. And
it seems to be. It was very amazing. Even the amorphous solars, which are not really here or there. The amorphous solar, which is what the United States has bet heavily on.
Oh, that's what used to run your calculator and your solar watch.
It still does.
Stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why they're not on our phones and on our computers yet.
Our lapels.
On
our back.
Oh, I feel so much better. I went in the sunlight and my pump worked a little better.
Still suit.
Oh, my gosh. But anyhow, the amorphous thing, which I can barely see you. Here we go. The amorphous solar panels, which are a mixture and can be, sputtered deposit.
Well, they're super thin.
Yeah, they're very thin, flexible, et cetera. They're getting up into the teens now in efficiency, which is really incredible.
They used to be down 7% or so.
That's right.
And
but they have a really neat thing, whereas the average silicone solar is...
The phone rang.
I know, the phone rang and stopped me.
Yeah.
Where the average solar, which is made of silicone, is... it's pretty much more efficient than that. It's actually pushing 22%. We got somebody on the phone right
now. Hi, you're on the Home Power Hour.
Hello?
Who do we got here?
Hello? What did I do?
Hi, you weren't on the Home Power Hour.
I can't believe it. The one button on the panel was not pushed right. Oh, I hope he calls back. Gee whiz. I hope I don't have to go on the air and try to call him back.
Nope, there he is.
All right, let's try it one more time.
Hi, you're on the Home Power Hour.
Hello?
Hello. Hi. This is Robert Staten.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, Robert. We were just giving a prelude to your book. It's called Power Shift. Is this the right Robert?
Yes, it is.
All right. We were talking about the solar cells, and unfortunately, I had not pushed a button when you first called, and now we are connected. My bad.
Okay, very good.
But I'm glad that you're on the air with us this morning. And, you know, what on earth got you to write a book?
Well, this book has sort of been my lifelong goal, really. I got into alternative energy back in the late 1970s when I was in a graduate student as physics and found that people were doing solar energy in the late 70s and early 80s, and I felt like I could contribute something to that. So I learned as much as I could about solar and got into teaching it and researching it and doing all kinds of stuff with it. And over the years, I've felt that there was a great need to tell more people about it. And that's sort of what I've been working toward with the book over the many years in terms of developing it. So I felt like solar energy is really our future. Not enough people know enough about it, and so it was my job to let everybody know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what we've been doing, too. So
your name is Robert Arthur Staten, and
you've
written a book, and it's called Power Shift from Fossil Energy to Dynamic Solar Power. And I take it that you're a teacher as well, correct?
Well, I'm not teaching now, but I have taught solar energy and energy courses in the past,
Cool. So I was cracking the book and looking into it, and you make a big distinction between a store of energy and a source of power.
Yeah. Part of what, in terms of understanding the transition we're going through now, people tend to think in terms of swapping one energy source for another. And in this case, what we're doing is actually changing how we're using energy. The energy sources we're using now are primarily fossil fuels. And if you think of those in terms of an energy store as a sense of a stockpile of energy that we take out of the ground, those are of a finite size. The oil reservoirs in the ground and the coal seams have a certain amount of energy stored in them. And then when they are actually drilled out or mined out, then they're done and have to be left behind. And that somebody, the drillers have to move on and find something new. But with solar, we're not dealing with just a store of energy. We're dealing with a source of power that comes to us continuously from the sun. And as a result, we don't have to keep looking for new sources once we've found it. We have found it, and we just need to put it to use. And once we have put it in the equipment in place to make use of solar energy, then we can harvest that power indefinitely. And that means we can put in place equipment that will supply all of our needs, and in 50 years, 100 years, if we maintain that equipment, we don't have to go looking again for another source of energy because we have a continuous source of power. So that's the distinction I like to make, is that with a power source, it lasts forever, essentially. As long as the sun shines, we will be able to generate energy from it.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, so this is a really big change that humanity is going through then.
Yeah, I would put it on a par with the discovery of fire and the exploitation of fossil fuels, because it's really a changeover from one way of using energy to a completely different way of using it. And part of issue with converting from fossil fuels to solar is that they are very different. Fossil fuels are something you can use as fast as you want, as fast as you can pull them out of the ground, whereas with solar, once you've installed your solar panels, you harvest the energy at the rate that it comes in, but not any faster than that. So it has that limitation, but it has the great advantage of that you can keep harvesting it essentially forever as long as your equipment lasts. So.
And you don't necessarily have to keep buying something from somebody. So it's
well, that's the thing. Once if you manage to install solar photovoltaic panels yourself and get them on your roof, then you've got a source of energy that will last you indefinitely, as long as the panels last, which is typically 20 or 30 years. So.
Or more. We're not quite sure, right?
yeah.
It's an interesting way that you set up your book. We were discussing this before you came on, that you started off with the various transitions that humankind has gone through. Could you address those real quick?
Sure. One of the things I felt people needed was a little bit of historical perspective on our energy situation, because it seems like there's a very limited discussion in the news about how we got into this situation. And basically, human beings distinguished themselves in the early days by learning to use energy. That is, we were the only animal that figured out how to use fire. And from that, we basically built our civilization on various sources of energy. We use fire to protect ourselves from predators and cook our food and keep warm. And then from there, we went on to exploit wind energy and for travel. So we basically ended up doing a advancing our civilization on energy, and we got to the point in the Industrial Revolution where we couldn't harvest enough energy from wood and the wind or water power as fast as we needed it for all the industrial machines they were setting up. And it just so happened at that time that fossil fuels were discovered and learned how to exploit them with the steam engines. And so that's really when our energy use took off, is when we started the Industrial Revolution and put those seemingly unlimited fossil fuels to use and grew our civilization from it.
Wow.
And so we went through one energy period, which was based on wood, and we then moved into the fossil fuel epoch, which was started roughly around 1800 and extending through to today. And now we need to transition again to the next phase, which is the solar epoch. And so that's what we're just starting now, and it's exciting to see it happening. But it is going to take a long time, because this is a huge change for human civilization.
Yes. How long in your book do you predict it's going to take?
Well, I can't really predict. All I can do is I put forth in the book one scenario which I thought was plausible, which would be a transition period of about 50 years. Mm-hmm. So if we continue the growth of solar energy as we're doing now and continue that process for about five decades, we will gradually be able to phase out the use of fossil fuels and phase in the use of solar energy. And if we do it gradually, it won't be disruptive, and it'll be done on a case-by-case basis as needed, and over time we'll be able to just stop using the fossil fuel equipment and leave the remaining fossil fuels in the ground.
Yeah, so we won't run out of fossil fuels. We'll just choose to stop using them.
Yeah, essentially. They're going to be having a big meeting in Paris in December to discuss how they can restrict carbon emissions. But I like to look at it from the point of view is if we adopt solar massively, we won't have to restrict carbon emissions. We can just abandon them, essentially stop using the carbon fuels over time and move on to something that doesn't produce carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm. Now, it sort of has to be a moral choice, though, doesn't it? Because it's partly
a moral choice, but it's also there are so many advantages to solar energy beyond just the fact that it doesn't produce carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't produce air pollution or water pollution. And these are very practical things that we need to deal with constantly in keeping the environment clean. And right now, the economy would benefit greatly from a lot of solar energy being installed to replace the fossil fuels.
Yeah.
And on an individual basis, the economics for a lot of people look really good. So they will do it not necessarily because they want to do it as a moral choice, but because it makes sense for them economically.
Uh-huh.
Hold on. I've got another phone call here. Hold on for a second there.
Sure.
Robert?
Hello. This is Carolina Soothsayers. We're calling you to inform you that the future will be solar and wind and all things renewable. Thank you. Well, there you have it. You know, every year you see these advertisements about we can foretell the future, talk to us. And we just, Carolina Soothsayers calls us every now and then and preempts us with some type of announcement. So that's pretty good.
Well, there you go.
There you are. There you have it.
I heard recently there's actually been more solar installed than they've been counting, because they've been leaving off a lot of those smaller residential systems and off-grid systems.
That's right. It's kind of hard for them to keep track of all these small systems that are going in. That's part of the issue with being such a new and different kind of energy system that we're putting in place.
Yeah,
it's very easy for the utility companies to report, well, we built this 30-megawatt array of solar out there in the desert. But it's really hard for them to count all the individual systems that are going in because those are individual people or businesses making decisions on their own, mm-hmm. and they don't have to necessarily report it. Claim the tax credit for it, but it's a different way of collecting the information, and so I think it has been undercounted.
Yeah, that's interesting. The other thing I thought was really interesting in the last 100 years, the use of fossil fuel allowed the forest to regrow.
Well, the idea there was that when the Industrial Revolution started, all of the metal making that they needed to do for the machinery required the use of wood to process the steel. And so in the early stages of the Industrial Revolution, they literally had mobile steel mills so that they could follow the retreating edge of the forest.
Wow.
Because they were using the wood so fast that it was cheaper for them to move the steel production than it would be to transport all the wood that they needed. So it was a crazy situation and obviously not sustainable. So the discovery of fossil fuels allowed them to substitute, particularly coal, of course, mm-hmm. in the making of steel, allowed them to substitute that for all the wood and therefore let the forest grow. Yeah.
It's nice because we have tree huggers now. You know, that's
yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't have had a lot to hug if we'd...
Well, and something similar happened with whales, actually.
Uh-huh. Whale oil.
In the 1800s, whale oil was the preferred form of lighting in the oil lamps, and so they were hunting whales almost to just extinction. But
give
it was
me the right whale. It floats when we kill it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing because it started off with just longboats going right offshore and harvesting whales. And as they eliminated those, they started having to go all around the world and develop
very big
boats that could, you know, render it at sea and come back, you know, 5 years later with a full load of oil.
Exactly, wow. Right. They were going all over. There was no place in the world where whales could hide, essentially. It was the discovery of kerosene that could be extracted from oil that allowed them to make a fuel that was cheaper and easier to distribute than whale oil. So gradually the whaling industry couldn't compete and declined, and as a result the whales managed to survive.
Yes, we're talking
so
with Robert...
in a sense we can thank fossil fuels for that bit, even though today fossil fuels are creating more problems than they're solving.
Well, there's no place in the world where oil is safe. We're going out and harpooning the earth every place that we can.
That's
we're talking
true.
With Robert Arthur Staten, who's the author of, Robert Staten, author of Power Shift from Fossil Energy to Dynamic Solar Power. Robert, is there a web address for your book?
Yeah, I have a publishing company called Sandstone Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
So the web address is www.sandstonepublishing.com.
So this is a self-published book?
That's right.
Oh, wow.
And these days, a lot of people are doing self-publishing, partly because it's hard to get a publisher if you're a new author, but also because there are a lot of advantages to it. I get a much higher percentage of each book that gets sold, and I have much more control over the marketing of it. So
you can't have one.
Yeah.
We'll be right back
with
you in just a second, Robert. We've got to salute our underwriters today. So hold on, please.
Sure.
My cup again. Sing it again now.
The Home Power Hour is underwritten by
the Handy Village Institute, putting the human hand back into the dignity of living. Go ahead, make something.
We're talking with Robert Staten, author of the book Power Shift from Fossil Energy to Dynamic Solar power. We've never heard that as a theme. This is totally unknown to us.
We've discovered the sun.
Yes, my gosh.
This is great because it does give a nice overview of how we got into the fix we're in, and then explains to people what's behind that outlet, where their power comes from, and how that can shift.
I didn't know that.
Well, most people have a fairly kind of a limited view of where their energy comes from.
And
for them, they're pretty much a consumer of energy. You pay your electric bill, you're in your gas bill, and you go to the gas station and you buy your gasoline for your car, and that's pretty much how you use energy. But today, you have some choices. People can, rather than just accept the electricity that comes from their utility company, they can generate their own with solar panels on their roof. And that changes the picture quite a bit, because now they're not just an energy consumer, they're becoming an energy producer. Mm-hmm. And many people will feed some of that electricity back into the grid, and maybe their neighbor is using some of their solar power on a good sunny day.
Yeah, boy, it's really easy to just drive into a gas station and fuel up, but boy, is
worship the pump.
That would be really hard to do on your own in your own backyard.
Well, I'll say nobody wants to drill their own oil well and make their own gasoline from it. So, but they could put up their own solar panels and charge their own electric car with it, and have their form of transportation powered by the sun with the energy that they're generating themselves.
Yes, we've had several guests that have come on and explained that that's actually cheaper than gasoline. So it's a good, almost a killer app if it ever gets out there.
It is getting out there.
So you have your own photovoltaic modules and system?
Yes, we've been living actually off the grid since 1997 when we built our house. About that time, the local utility was undergoing deregulation, and they no longer would pay to bring in the power line across the distance.
Uh-huh.
So we were faced with multiple thousands of dollars to bring in the power line just for the privilege of paying the utility bill. And at that point, we kind of went, well, maybe there's a better way to do this. So we instead invested in a small array of photovoltaic panels initially, and some batteries and a generator, and we went off grid.
And you were very
we've been
big
that way
concerned.
Ever since. Over time, we've added more panels, though. The nice thing about photovoltaics is that it's modular, so we were three more times able to add additional sets of panels. So now we're all set, and we can run everything we need to run, and even charge our, we have a plug-in Prius, which is a combination of gas car and electric car, and we charge that off our solar panels, too.
This just in.
Graduation?
Son, we're so proud of you, and here is 400 watts of solar power. Oh, Mom, Dad, thank you. It's going to happen very near future. You know, we've been giving
well,
the computers
you know, it sure does. Kids. It makes a lot of sense for people who are in the younger generation to get solar panels, because they'll be able to use them their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for a great gift for someone in the younger generation who can't yet afford solar panels would be a great idea if they have a way to do it. So,
hey, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, I just bought a solar array. Great-granddaddy, you planning to live that long? You betcha. This brought to you by AARP.
So how is the nuclear industry going to fit into our future?
How is the nuclear industry? Well, hopefully not. Right now, they were trying to revive nuclear energy, partly as a result of the carbon dioxide problem.
Mm-hmm.
The nuclear industry said, well, listen, we don't produce carbon dioxide, so we're the best bet for the future if you want to reduce fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem, of course, was the issue with radioactivity, and when the Fukushima accident occurred in Japan, then people started rethinking that whole idea of nuclear energy, and opposition to it went up again, and they've had various votes on it, and every vote they have on nuclear energy, it gets voted down. So
yeah, yeah.
I think there's unlikely to be a huge resurgence. There are a few countries that are still doing it, but in most places it's becoming too expensive compared to solar energy. So it can't compete in the long run.
This song just in for nuclear power. The lower from the nuclear industry.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
I wondered what that was. Yeah, well, that's I'd just as soon see nuclear power in the rearview mirror. As we move away from that.
Well, it's fascinating what's happening in Japan.
The Fukushima is still going on, right?
Well,
it's still
right,
a melted mess there.
But not only that melted mess, but they've had a lot of solar put in. That's actually the capacity of the solar already installed since Fukushima is equivalent to the capacity of the nuclear reactors, although the nuclear reactors were available more. They were hoping to go to 100 gigawatts. They're at 29 gigawatts right now. And the government is trying to stop it to try to restart the nuclear industry again, open up those reactors.
I don't understand why governments support nuclear power so much.
Maybe our author could tell us that.
Well, some governments have this idea that it is, because it fits into the existing utility model, it's the best thing to do. Utility model is set up so that there's centralized generating stations that feed out to hundreds of thousands of subscribers to the energy, all the customers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very easy for them to support because that's the existing way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas solar is distributed and it's all over the place, and it doesn't look like it's going to be big enough to meet our needs. But the way it's happening is there are so many solar installations coming in. As you say, it accumulates over time and eventually matches the capabilities of these huge nuclear reactors. So if they just change their mindset a little bit, I think they could see the direction that it's going in.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of trying to pursue essentially a losing technology, adopt the solar one, which is clearly the best thing that we have for our future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like to me in this the negotiations with Iran that we should have been exporting wind power and solar power to them so they don't have any need of that.
I have the same thoughts. Why don't we just inform them or subsidize their development of solar energy? Because they certainly have the capabilities of producing as much energy as they would from the sun as they could from any nuclear program that they put together. So.
Yeah.
I think it would have been a great idea, but I don't think it ever came up.
Huh. Wow. Well, you had an interesting comparison of the work we get done in our lives today with electricity and other energy sources with slavery. I thought that was an interesting.
Well, exactly. In our long history, we have learned to use all kinds of different energy sources. And in the early days, when we had just fire as our source of heat, we also needed a source of mechanical energy. And we used animals a lot for pulling plows and lifting water and any time we needed heavy work to be done. And unfortunately, we also treated some other people as animals, essentially, and enslave them to do mechanical work.
Mm-hmm.
And they were much more effective in certain tasks, of course, than animals because, you know, people are smart and they can do complicated things. But slaves were essentially a kind of energy source, and it got to the point in the South, in the U.S. South, in the 1800s, where the agricultural system there was completely dependent on slaves as the energy source for running all those cotton farms. So they resisted having to abandon slavery because they needed the energy just to run their system.
An economic argument. And it was put forth in the British Parliament with their huge empire of when do we give up slavery. And you know, the various moralists of the time came up and said it's immoral to have slaves. And so the difficult thing was, how are we going to end this? You know, do we set a date, or do we let, if you've been a slave for several generations, the next generation will be free? How are we going to do this? And how are we going to deal with the economic dislocation when we shift from this energy source, this power source, really, to what power source? Finally, they came across and said, slavery ends now. And within a year, the Industrial Revolution came about with the steam engine, which had been sitting, you know, waiting because slavery was so cheap and, institutionalized. Hmm. We're hoping to see the same thing when we end the fossil fuels industry.
Yeah, there's very similar arguments being made today that it's an economic issue. We can't switch to solar because it costs too much. We have to keep cheap fossil fuels going in order to keep the economy running. And that's why there's a lot of resistance in the U.S. Congress to ending any subsidies for fossil fuels and adding more support to solar, because they feel that fossil fuels are required to run our economy. And if we restrict those fossil fuels, it's going to harm the economy. So that's their line of reasoning, and it's hard to get past that. So
yeah.
Once they figured out that, oh, well, actually we can replace it, I think they'll be more amenable to making those changes.
Yeah, the solar industry gets criticized for not being able to stand on its own, needing subsidies and stuff like that. And that's so infuriating to hear, because people don't realize how many subsidies go into the infrastructure that's already there
for fossil fuels.
The fossil fuel industry currently worldwide gets five times as much subsidy as all the solar and wind systems that are in the world. For some reason, only the subsidies for solar are pointed out, but the subsidies for fossil fuels have been behind the scenes for years, and they're massive by comparison. So if they could switch those subsidies over from fossil fuels to solar, just that one act alone would push solar way past fossil fuels in just a few years.
Or if one of the things about the subsidies for the fossil fuels is it's to support a dwindling industry. I mean, they're kind of hitting the wall as far as energy in, energy out has been dropping dramatically. The BTU content of all fossil fuels that are harvested are going down. So their subsidies support that. In North Carolina, the subsidies that we put in have increased solar 1,000-fold in 7 years. You know, we had less than a megawatt just 7 years ago, and now we have more than 1,000 megawatts in the state. So
it's
a subsidy that has some impact and causes growth and transformation and jobs, et cetera. And most of these are scheduled to be phased out.
Yeah. And, of course, the nuclear power industry wouldn't survive if they even had to pay their own insurance.
It's true.
Yeah, the nuclear industry gets a huge subsidy. And the nice thing about the solar subsidies is that, in a sense, there's a lot of social benefits to solar energy. The clean air, clean water, none of which get really included in the cost of comparisons with solar and fossil fuels. So if you think in terms of the actual benefits of solar energy, society is gaining a lot. So by helping individuals put in solar, society is getting some benefit. Mm-hmm. That benefit essentially makes up for that subsidy. So you could think of society as becoming a silent partner for all these people that are putting in solar energy and mm-hmm. do benefit from it. So it's really not putting money into something for nothing. We actually get quite a bit out of it in the long run.
So what can individuals do?
The thing that's nice about photovoltaics is that is something that an individual can do. If you have a rooftop that's available and it gets good exposure to the sun, you could install your own solar panels. And the minute you do that, you have replaced a continuous stream of fossil fuels that you were using before from your utility company.
Uh-huh.
If you don't have the money to put in the system, you can perhaps lease it, or there are the other third-party arrangements where you can get solar panels on your roof even if you don't have the cash up front. And if you don't have a roof, then you could actually subscribe to a community solar arrangement where third party will put in a solar array in some sunny location and essentially have subscribers to that. So you can buy into it, you can own a few panels, and you get all the benefits of owning solar, but it's off-site. So you get to be a solar owner without it being on your own roof.
Yeah, community wind, too, is a big thing growing.
Yes.
Exactly, yeah. The nice thing is that you put these things in the place where they're best suited for it and then distribute the benefits of it.
So, you know, that's from the, you know, from individuals are distributed like the power source. Could you tell us about how this affects that individuals know their own energy patterns and could change them or adjust them?
Well, yeah. The thing about solar is it's not done in... Like I said, the utility model is you build a big centralized power plant and distribute it to everyone, whereas solar is a lot of individual decisions, and each decision is by someone who has to look at their own situation, look at how much energy they're using and what kind of energy they're using, and how well their solar array would meet their needs. And it's a much more individualized kind of arrangement, so that the economics of it depend entirely on your situation. It's very hard to generalize. So if an individual contacts a solar person, they will generally come, solar installer, they'll come in and look at your utility bills and discuss it with you compared to how much an array on your roof could meet your needs and go from there.
Wow. And of course, this then leads to, because of that, you can maximize the value of that because you're matching your needs to your power produced.
Something yeah,
the power
exactly. And the great thing about generating your own electricity is that in terms of the value of it, you're getting essentially the retail value. In other words, the electricity that you produce and use directly has a value equal to what you would be paying for that electricity on your utility bill. Whereas when the utility company generates solar, they basically can only do it at the wholesale level. And so it actually makes more sense for an individual to do solar than the utility company because they get more value for their money.
And there's a lot of losses, of course, in the long-distance transmission of electricity, too.
Well, there is some, yeah, and that has to be taken into account. But I think there will be a mix of individual systems and large utility systems out there, partly because industry is going to need a lot of electricity, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the individuals that are using their own electricity, a lot of them don't have a lot to share. But a big array out there serving the utility company can feed into industry and commercial services, too.
Well, not only that, but we were talking about matching, you know, the power to the use, but it's also matching the power to your value structure.
Yeah.
I mean, individuals have value structures, and more companies, like in our own state, are, you know, saying, hey, we want renewable power for the Google complex farms or Apple servers or what have you. So
yeah, it becomes a PR thing. Right, they can proclaim their own green credentials by putting in solar, and it makes good PR, and it actually is good for society, and it's not just PR.
Yeah, and then, of course, in your book, this is from, what chapter are we on here? It's like chapter 25. We're close to the end of your book, but the last one is step five on this, of this five-step program that we just did. Individuals can act now, right?
Exactly. The thing with all the other alternatives to fossil fuels is that they're going to require much longer lead time. One of the alternatives they talk about is clean coal, which is a system where they still burn coal, but they capture the gases that are coming out of it and clean it up so that the carbon dioxide isn't released. And they're saying, well, we can do that instead of solar. But in actual fact, clean coal isn't ready to go.
And
it's not ready to be put in place now. And in nuclear energy even isn't ready in the sense of a massive scale-up. They would have to do reactors and all kinds of reprocessing of waste in order to be able to handle meeting all of society's needs with nuclear power. So it's not really ready either. But solar is available right now. You can call up a local solar installer and have a system on your roof a couple of weeks. And there's really very little that the big energy industries can do to compete with that.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty good. And then also, I mean, there's a whole education process that happens. As soon as you have solar on your roof, you're interested in energy, you're thinking about your energy use, you're maybe, you know, taking a shorter shower, or you're hanging your clothes out to dry in the sun rather than running your electric dryer. You suddenly understand the whole you know, matrix that we're in better.
Yeah, that's really true. When I started generating my own electricity, I realized that if I want to make this go further, in other words, do more with the electricity I have, I need to use it more efficiently. So we were very careful in, for example, buying a highly efficient refrigerator and replacing all of our lights with compact fluorescents, and making sure that the electricity that we were generating would go as far as we could make it go. And so we got very efficient in using our energy and looked around for other ways we could apply our solar. So, for example, I bought an electric lawnmower from Home Depot, and when I plug it into my solar panels, I have a solar-powered lawnmower.
Yeah.
Which is really great. It's it doesn't pollute. It's very quiet, and it runs off the sun.
And I can mow in the middle of the night, things. Not bother my neighbors.
Exactly. Off my batteries, exactly.
Yeah. But don't mow in the middle of the night. That's not a good idea. That's
is that the one I wanted?
Well, this is great. This is a fabulous book to introduce people to all these choices.
Act now and buy your energy freedom. Why be a slave to the fossil fuels? Be independent. Use your energy. You, sir.
Me?
Yes, you, sir, can be energy independent.
Really? Okay. There's also a really different, when you were talking about the power flowing from a centralized source, there's also everybody's check flying back to that centralized point, their money.
Yeah.
And so there's a very different economy of more local money circulating.
Yeah, that's really true. If you think about when you pay your utility bill, that check goes to some simple utility company, which is probably owned by some mega corporation whose headquarters are who knows where. And if you think in terms of all of the people in your community that are paying into that utility company and all that money flowing out of the local economy, that's a big drain on the local economy to pay for that energy. Whereas if you start generating your own electricity, then that value that you're producing stays in the local economy and recirculates and promotes additional people in businesses in the local economy. So it works at the local level and it works at the national level. Countries can look at their trade deficit mm-hmm. for energy, and many countries have a huge trade deficit. We import tons of oil still. So.
Oh, in our state, we import everything. I mean, we have no fossil fuels, no nuclear, but that's what we use. $21 billion a year, and we have the sun shining outside, the wind blowing, etc. Every local dollar you spend will sit there and ripple out into the economy.
Exactly.
That's our little sound effect for money rippling out into the...
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what that was.
Oh, this is the sun sending this energy. We've just recorded it. Oh, that's nice.
So if people want this book, how do they get it?
Yeah.
Well, it's currently available primarily online through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I'm working to get it into bookstores. As an independent publisher, that's a little harder to do these days.
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely can be ordered online essentially anywhere in the world these days, which is what's really great. It's also available in ebook form, Kindle or a Nookbook or any of the other Kobo forms that people want. So I tried to make it as easy to get as possible. And in the age of the Internet today, that's basically making it available online. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, it's at you've been going on some book tours for it?
Well, I actually did, yeah. I had a short book tour in the Northwest. The best part about it was going to Orcas Island in talking in the bookstore there, because that's such a beautiful place, and the setting is just magnificent.
Are you going to come to the Southeast?
I don't have anything scheduled yet.
Well, you've got a place to stay, so...
Okay, yeah, that's
just,
nice
we've
to know.
Got a cot here in the studio that we'll be happy to.
Thanks. Well, I do know that North Carolina is one of the leading states for solar these days, so I think there'd be a pretty receptive audience there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're so happy. This book has only been out how long?
Since late April, April 22nd. It debuted on Earth Day, which I thought was very appropriate.
Very nice.
That's nice. And you're going to be speaking at the... here we go. The American Solar Energy Association's meeting at Penn State, correct?
That's right. On July 29th, the American Solar Energy Society has their annual meeting, and I'm going to be giving a short talk there, a little five-minute talk, one of their lightning talks, mm-hmm. and I'll be talking about how power will be conquering energy over the next 50 years.
Nice. And we've been talking with Robert Staton about his new book, Power Shift.
Wow.
This is very fun.
And we want to thank you, Robert, for getting up so early there on the left-hand coast for us to talk with us this morning.
Well,
you got a full day ahead of you, I'm sure.
That's right. Raring to go now.
Well, thanks so much for your book and for being on our show.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. It's good to talk about this stuff.
Okay.
Stay tuned for Radio in Vivo coming up next on your community radio station. Ernie Hood's going to talk about science.
We're so thankful that we had Robert on today. This is really cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Robert.
It's about time, it's about space, about strange people in the strangest place. It's about time, it's about flight, traveling faster than the speed of light. About space people and a brave crew, as through the barrier of time they flew. Past the Roman senators, past an armored knight, past the firing Minuteman. To this modern sight, it's about time for you and me to meet these people of amazing feats. It's about two astronauts and how they educate.
Hey, we're up here.
A prehistoric woman and her prehistoric mate. It's about time, it's about space, about strange people in the strangest place.
Oh. It's about time to go solar, don't you think?
I think it is about time to use that renewable energy and that wind off our coast.
That's it.
And that biomass.
In this strange place where everything is new, will they manage to survive?
Let's hope so.
Watch each week and see. Will they get accustomed to the 20th century? It's about time for our goodbyes to all our prehistoric gals and guys.
Bye-bye, everybody.
And now, it's about time.
It's about time.
It's about time.
To go.
It's a celebration.
You've been listening to
The Whole Power Hour.
Let's celebrate
with Solar Jim.
And
come
Sustainable
now.
Jack.
Let's celebrate.